Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. Today we're very excited to introduce our guest, Miss Brianna Moss. She is from the South Side of Chicago and has created an organization called Fresh Culture that is her company. And we're going to be chatting with her today, so stay tuned.
Let's talk about like where my idea came from. So Fresh Culture, I'm more of an entrepreneurial spirit. I've worked for people for a long time. I've done a lot of different things in entertainment and music and things like that for a long time for other people. And I'm just like in a place where I really don't want to be working for people. I can do it. I can collaborate with people in a team, but I'd more so just rather, you know, run my own show.
Run with it, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, but there can't be a company without a purpose. And so for me, my business function, what I know how to do, because I say this all the time, I can't sing or dance. I can't sing or dance. I can't draw or anything like that, but I'm very creative with a list and I'm very action oriented, and I can definitely execute events. I can do that, but I can't do other things. So I said, well, how can I take what I know how to do and use it to give back? So a long time ago, I think I was like, I don't know, maybe a freshman or something in high school. I was watching like a benefit concert. I don't know. It might not even have been a freshman. I think it was like around the time Hurricane Katrina or something happened, and they were having like all of these benefit things and maybe a benefit concert or something happened. And I was watching that and I was like, wow, that would be awesome. And so years later, in college, I was doing concerts and everything, and I was always like, well, my concert has to support something. Like, a percentage of the funds have to go to something, like something. And so I finally decided on the business side that I would do benefit concerts. Like, that would be my whole job. That's all I ever want my life to be. Like, yes, I can do branding. Yes, I can do marketing. Yes, I can do this. But all I really ever wanted my life to be was planning benefit concerts. For a while, I didn't know what I would be supporting. When I was younger, I'll just be open. So, a long time ago, when I was younger, I would say from like maybe 7, I had like a very close family sibling. Well, not sibling, but godbrother or whatever.
Sure.
He was molesting me. And I really didn't know like that was a thing. I just thought that was like part of normal life.
Yeah.
And it didn't get to like full on penetration until my mom was like giving birth to my little sisters. I was like 12 and she was like in the hospital giving birth, and somebody needed to spend the night. And so I spent the night at that house, and it got to like full on penetration, and I still didn't say anything. And I didn't, honestly, I have a tattoo like on my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how parents, sometimes they have that sixth sense, like they know you're hiding something. Mm-hmm. So the day I got the tattoo, when I turned 16, I went and I got a tattoo at a barbershop. The day I got that tattoo was the day I told my mom that everything was happening. And I don't know if it was because I was like trying to deflect from the tattoo and be like, well, this is happening.
Yeah.
or anything. But needless to say, that's when it all kind of came out. And from that point on, it seemed like people who either had the same experiences as me or who were having like suicidal ideation and that type of feeling or depression or anxiety, those type of people were always like befriend me, and those became my friends. And so through high school and through college, I had a lot of friends who had either suicidal thoughts, severe depression, anxiety, and from multiple factors. I mean, growing up in a neighborhood, you could just pick one.
It's true.
But, you know, they had that. And I was just like, okay. So finally, I was home from college and I had a very, 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 very close friend. And I thought that, like, for him, he was never one of those people to be like, I'm dealing with something. Mm-hmm. He wasn't that kind of person. He just wasn't. And so I would, like, bring my stuff to him. I'd be like, I'm dealing with this. Help me. Help. And he'll be like, you could just get over it, whatever. He'll say something, make me laugh and all of that. And I just thought he was fine. And I thought he was kind of like a rock kind of person. Like, nothing really bad ever happened to him or anything like that. One day he decided that, you know, he would go ahead and commit suicide. And for me, I was just like, I don't know, I was thrown off. I was like completely thrown off. I was completely frustrated. And then I had friends who also, if they didn't commit suicide, they were talking very scary. So they were like outside, like, I'm ready for anything. Da, 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 da. And then I had a lot of friends who were like just outside, like being murdered or shooting people or like just very reckless behavior. And I was like, what is this about? Like, why is everybody doing this? Mm-hmm. So I started researching and trying to figure out, like, what is this about? And then I got to a point of, like, this is mental, and this is based off trauma. And then, you know, like, there's other people, like my dad, he does, like, restorative justice. And I was like, oh, there's a trauma portion of that. And I was like, okay, well, what does this lead to? And finally, after all of that, I kind of got to the point of, okay, Black people and other people, people in general don't talk about mental health. Mm-mm. It's a lot easier in other communities to talk about it. Like, some people say, like, oh, I just went to my therapist the other day. But that's usually more affluent communities.
Yeah.
It's never in communities who have a lot of, you know, severities going on. It's never in those types of communities. And it's never in communities of color, because we kind of just go to church,
right,
pray about it, and we kind of just let it go, or we call you crazy and we say, well, just don't mess with that person, or just don't talk about that with that person, just hide it, we cover it up. It's not healthy. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was like, okay, how do I do this? And I, you know, looked at research studies, and I found that we don't even have access to mental health care. It's not free, it's not a cheap service.
No, man.
And it's hard to pay for. So when you think about, do I want to buy groceries or do I want to send my child to a therapist? You're going to buy groceries.
You're going to buy groceries.
Yeah, or because some people don't go to the emergency room when their child is sick, mm-hmm. like because they don't want to pay for the ambulance ride. Like, when you know how much an ambulance ride is, you don't care about mental health care.
No.
And I know that sounds like very severe and blunt, but like, it's serious.
But that's what it is. It is
severe. When you're focused on bills and things like that, like, you're not focused on mental health care. You're like, I'm just going to go to church and that's going to be all right. Or I'm going to find some other things to do and then that's going to be all right. Or you start acting out and having very severe behavior. So that's where the idea came from. And that's kind of how I got to the point of, I love music. Self-expression is the most therapeutic process for me. Right. I know that there's other people out here who are artists and who either are artists or are not artists who use music as a way to self-express. Because I've always thought that artists are the most, lack of better words, war-torn souls. Like, they're just the troubled souls.
Troubled souls. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Artists, if you draw, if you dance, if you sing, like, most of the time, you've had a really rough life, especially if you're super successful and you can impact a lot of people with your voice, is because people can feel that and they relate to those emotions.
It's a way to release the pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they relate to your pain, so therefore it helps them release.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's why I created this types of events. So let me know if I'm talking too much.
No, you talk. That's why we wanted to have you on. Thanks for coming.
Okay, so
you keep going.
so like, what's next for Fresh Culture?
Yeah,
I would say I have a YouTube channel that for me is kind of like, I'm gonna pick it up a little bit more. This past year I just started, I was trying to figure everything out, And I was trying to figure out, what do I want to talk about? What do I not want to talk about? So, like, I want to make it fun, but I always want it to be a platform for education. So, for me, I think upcoming this year, it's going to be a lot more posts for my YouTube channel. And there'll be a lot heavily based about music, but also based about my life, because I figured I wasn't being honest at first. I was just, like, kind of posting things that were growing with the trends. And I was like, well, no, let me talk about how I really feel. Mm-hmm. And how does it feel to be my age and where I'm at in life. And I know that there's other people that kind of, like, can relate.
Absolutely.
Because when you're at the age you are, so when you're 25, you're at a place in your life where you're, like, especially if you went to college, you're at a place in your life where you're like, I'm supposed to have a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. At least I think so. I'm supposed to be super successful, or at least on the way. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not, then I'm not doing something right. Or you're just at a place where you feel like you've ran out of time.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that you could have, like, either went back and did, or now you're trying to do it. And then you have older people telling you, baby, you have a whole bunch of time, and you just don't see it that way. And so that's kind of where I feel like my YouTube channel will focus as it relates to Fresh Culture and the business journey that we're on. In addition to that, I'm planning, like, some music showcases and, of course, working with a couple clients to develop their brands. But the bigger thing that's going to happen is probably in March, where I have, like, some type of dinner. I want to call it a dinner with Fresh Culture. I'm still in the planning stages of that. But in March, March 16th, it should be kind of completed and ready to roll out by January, as far as the promotion and everything goes. But it's going to be called A Dinner with Fresh Culture, and I want to honor a couple of people who have been doing some really good work in the community as it relates to mental health, and a couple of artists as it relates to, like, their music and how it has helped people too. So that's kind of, like, where I'm at with it when it comes to, like, next steps for Fresh Culture, because I want to make it bigger and better, but I know that there's, like, baby steps that need to happen in that process. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it takes time to put something like that together, because you're talking a bigger event than that. That is fantastic. And real quick, before I forget, please, if you think they'd be okay with it, put me in contact with some of those other people that you're talking about having as a part of that dinner, who are doing different things within the Chicago communities, because I am always looking for people in Chicago to talk to, because that's where we're from.
Well, yeah, I definitely will. And I'm thinking that right now it's in its planning stages, and I'm thinking that I want to have it in March. It could get rolled back a couple of months, but right now I'm just sticking with March.
Sure. No, that's a big thing. Yeah, it takes months to plan those things. I've been a part of a few of them.
It takes months to plan, and sometimes it takes years to plan, and it's already kind of, like, half planned, but it's a matter of, like, solidifying things. Like, I'm one of those people that need one thing solidified and then everything kind of rolls into place.
Yeah.
So, and that's when I'll consider it accurate.
Right. Sure.
Like, let me get one thing solidified and then everything else can kind of, like, roll into place.
Right.
But pretty much where, like, Fresh Culture is, and where I am in the grand scheme of things and, like, my next steps. But I really think it's important. I really think it's important for all people from all walks of life, which is really funny because, like, one of my Facebook friends, I posted something, and one of my Facebook friends said, why don't you help veterans who have, like, PTSD? And for me, I want it to be as, I know that that's important.
Yeah.
Like, I know that there are a lot of veterans who have seen things that you don't ever want to see in life, like, that you probably can't even see in movies. I know that. I know they've seen things. I know they're severely impacted by that, because those are traumas that you, like, you just can't even fathom. Like,
right.
And sometimes you don't even know why you're over there. You just know you're over there fighting. And so I know that that's a whole nother level of PTSD and trauma and things like that. But I feel like there's so many people out there doing that work already.
Right.
That adding one more person to that particular group of people would just overflow the cup.
Right. I mean, yeah.
And I think that there's not a lot of people doing the work for regular everyday people.
Yeah.
And even though when veterans come home, they're considered regular everyday people.
Right. They become civilians, but
Right. I'm not excluding them from being a part of events and attending and reaching out to them, but I would say I'm not singling them out.
Sure.
As like a group that I want to come, because I feel like if you're here, then you need to be a part of it, period. If you're in law enforcement, you need to be a part of it, period.
Yeah.
And for me, it's kind of self-explanatory. So it's kind of funny for me to get that Facebook comment, because I was just like, well, why would you think they aren't included?
Yeah.
Because they are. It just doesn't specifically say.
Yeah, you're not excluding people. You're specifically focused on community. And I think that's important and fair to say that that's necessary and needed. Like you said, there's so many people who veterans have options. They're not perfect. There's certainly systematic breakdowns and all sorts of different problems. And if you compound black veterans or brown or different races, then that lessens. The resources, of course, lessen. But you're focusing on the entirety of a community. And I think that's brilliant and massively important.
Yeah, because the entirety of a community when it comes to mental health is that's every checkpoint you can reach as a member of the community. You're involved.
Right.
There's veterans in every community.
Yeah.
There's people of different races and different colors and different. Now, this one is always tricky for me because there's always a new term for it.
Yeah.
But different gender identities. There we go. Gender identities that are involved in the process. And there's just so much diversity when it comes to a community that thinking that I would be excluding. And I'm saying this because I wanted it to be noted that I'm never going to exclude veterans. So, and knowing that there are so many diversities within a community, they're included, period.
Of course. Yeah, period. Of course. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's so strange because I get comments like that sometimes too on our Twitter and on our blog. Like, what about this community? Or what about black people? I'm like, well, no, that you're misunderstanding. When I say people, I mean, people, when I talk about communities and communities that I grew up in, that's where I'm from. Like, that's the culture I know. That's the community I grew up in. Now, there's all sorts of different problems with that. And then I imagine you would get things, but from the other side, depending on who you talk to and stuff like that. Well, you can't relate to me because I'm white.
And see, that's the point of me bringing so many different people to the table.
Right, and that's part of the problem, yeah.
It's part of the problem, too, but I would say it's very important for someone to be able to talk to someone they can identify with.
Absolutely.
So bringing those people and those different, diverse backgrounds to the table helps me when I create an event. I think about, okay, who am I inviting?
Right.
To either sit on a panel or to perform, because the audience, I want it to be reflective, and I want the audience to be able to reflect, because that's in that way it makes the safest space, at least in my mind.
No,
it makes
the
safest space for you to be able to release and to connect and to talk to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you walk in that room and you see no one that looks like you, you're going to close off.
You're going to close off. Yeah. You're not going to trust it because you're going to get the belittling things that was what I was going towards when I was talking about some of the messages that we get, because people who follow us on Twitter or our blog, the podcast now, they know that I'm from the South Side of Chicago. And when I talk about that, I do get some that tell me, and a lot of it is the trauma community. That's my niche. That's more specifically who we speak to. And a lot of them tell me that, well, I just wanted to reach out, whether it be someone with DID or another trauma disorder who may not even recognize it as trauma. Like, well, no, that was just my norm. That's what we work on a lot in therapy for a lot of my parts, because, well, that's not trauma. That was just my norm. What do you mean? No, that's normal doesn't mean that that's good and not traumatic. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge problem. But when
if you think about the average, like, I have little sisters now who are my age they're about 13 now, mm-hmm. 13, 14. And when I was 13 and 14, my normal was to go outside as long as I could during the summer and, like, stay outside as much as possible all day and interact with friends. I had a couple crushes on guys, and you know, like we would ride our bikes as fast as we could to the nearest park, and like ride around the park. That was it. That was my normal. And you know, every now and then other things will happen, but that was my normal. Their normal is like, I can't really go outside because there's not any there's not anything to do outside. And I'm on my phone all day. Yeah. I watch Netflix and Hulu and whatever all day. And I talk to my friends on the phone, but that's it. I don't go play with them because, like, somebody got killed the other day and they don't know if I should come over there or something happened over here and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So that's their new normal. And that's kind of traumatic. Like, they had someone that, like, went from kindergarten all the way up until their sixth grade year, and they died in sixth grade. And so now they're getting ready to graduate from eighth grade, and they're like, oh, man, I miss so-and-so-and-so because he was supposed to be a part of this eighth grade class, and they reminisce about it, and it really affected them. But they didn't get any counseling about it.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? The grief counselor comes to the school for, like, a week, and then that's it. And so for me, I was just like, the new normal for a lot of people, and that's just mild, because the new normal for other teenagers these days is someone dies every other day.
Yeah.
Or every other week. Or my friend is in jail because he woke up and he didn't have any water, so he went and he did what he had to do to get some money so he can help his mom pay the bills. I don't know. It just goes to a deeper issue of, like, all of the different ways you can be impacted, and it can impact your mental, but also it's because of things that you can't even control, like your socioeconomic status.
Right.
That's something that you really can't control until you become a full-on adult. And even when you're a full-on adult, you can't control it.
And that's something else I was just going to say, too, is that a child shouldn't have to worry about that.
That shouldn't. But children do.
But children do. Yes, and that shouldn't be on a child. We had, and this is one of the tricky things, because I know a lot of you out there listening, I know that you're under the age of 18, and we do see your messages, but I can't legally give you certain advice because you're still a child. And we have people that we desperately want to help, and I give them, you know, like the NAMI, the helpline numbers and that sort of thing. And then, as we talked a little bit about earlier, Bright Star, Pastor Chris there is great. And then a lot of the other staff there, fantastic. That number for anyone who wants it is 833-TURN-123. Just so people know, they're located more so in the Bronzeville neighborhood. But places like this, people like Miss Moss, you're doing, unfortunately, necessary work. And it needs to change. But That's one thing that I tell people too, why we do some of the public speaking engagements that we do, why we discuss with psychologists and other doctors and community leaders, even the police department now through NAMI, and why we do what we do is because I want to be irrelevant. I don't want someone like me to be necessary for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's possible, but there are so many systematic problems that need to be corrected, and that's not something I can do. I can only point it out.
Yeah, once you get to the system and everything, and I hate to sound like a hippie, but once you get to that portion, it kind of gets a little bit out of your hands.
Yeah.
And the thing that I wanted to credit was, I used to be a public ally with AmeriCorps, and I remember we had a very amazing program manager. He's not there anymore, but his name is Corey Muldoon. And he mentioned the plight of, I forgot what the name of the organization was, but their entire goal was to legalize gay marriage, legalize gay marriage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally made it to their goal, and now they're closed. And he was like, that was the point for them.
Yeah.
They wanted to get to a point of being non-existent.
Right.
And so their point of being non-existent was getting marriage to a point where it's legalized for all members, all communities.
Yeah.
And for me, I think mine is getting Black and brown communities to a point where they can receive access to mental health care, either for free or for a very, very, very minimal price.
Right.
And I know that like the people who provide these services, they have to eat. But mm-hmm. if you create funding streams and funding sources, then we could be able to do it. And that's kind of how I see things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that's a fantastic goal. Going back to people seeing themselves in someone who can understand them, that is a lot of the messages that we get as well. Like, some people weren't sure. They're like, well, you know, you're white. I wasn't sure you could help me. Or if you knew any Black therapists or any Mexican therapists. Actually, a few people asked if I knew any Muslim therapists, because they want someone that can understand them. And that, I think, is perfectly fair and necessary. And a lot of what some of these different communities seem to be lacking. And I think that it's something that can be fixed. I think some of these systematic problems can be fixed. They can be helped. Whether you're using public outreach, different music events and that sort of thing, how you get people to listen is a big part of that. And I think that it needs to continue until, like you had said, with the Gay Marriage and Equality Organization, you do it with the goal of not being necessary anymore, because then once you achieve that, you fixed the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You were a part of fixing it.
And they've moved on to something else.
And you move on to something else. Right. Absolutely. I think it's just such an important thing, because so many times it's, well, I don't know, pray about it. That's what I heard growing up all the time, was just go pray about it. Talk to the pastor. Well, okay, I did. Well, you don't have enough faith. That's not what it is. I mean, I have seen people with such powerful faith and blind faith, and it astonishes me. And then they're blamed anyway.
And so see, the thing,
it's problematic.
The thing that I would say also impacts that is the motto of, like, what happens in this house stays in this house.
Ooh, yes, that's a biggie.
So growing up, that's always been kind of like our thing. What happens in this, even for me, unconsciously, because my mom was like, well, do you want to, when that event happened to me, she's like, well, do you want to call the police? And I was like, no, I don't want them involved in this situation. Sometimes I regret it, because I was like, I wonder, did he go on and do other things to other people? Because, like, nobody else knows.
Yeah.
But then I don't regret it, because it's like, it's out. And so that's a little selfish for me. Because I'm like, it's out. And that's it. That's all I needed to do, is to release it. But
I don't know if that's selfish so much as taking care of your needs for once, in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean. And I probably, that's the one thing that I probably will still struggle with forever. Sure. Like, was that a good decision?
Right.
Did that impact his behavior or change his behavior? Or, like, I have no idea.
Those what ifs.
I don't want to know.
Right.
Kind of, because I, like, don't ever, I've never seen him again after that. Never. I, like, never went to the house. I moved away, and, like, I've never seen him again after that. My mom still keeps in touch with, like, a couple of his family members, which is kind of, like, for me, but.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because I never see them. The what happens in this house stays in this house thing is kind of like my motto for everybody. Mm-hmm. Everyone follows that. And sometimes that can eat at you.
Yeah,
and so it's important to call hotlines, like you said. There's this other organization, too, that works with Black and brown women, to be exact. Young women, and sometimes I would say adolescents, like younger than 11, but more so like 11 to 25, like that's her range, 11 to 25. And it's called Sister Afia, or Afia. And they connect you with mental health care resources that are very, very cheap, low priced. And then they do a lot of like group therapy types of things. I know group therapy doesn't help everyone, because some people just don't want all of their business with everyone.
Sure.
But it's definitely an option too.
And that's fantastic. The more options that are available, I think the more people you'll reach and be able to help. And then hopefully that ripple effect takes place, because then someone else can say, hey, you know what? I know of this organization. They helped me personally. So try them. That is necessary, especially when we very much understand the struggle of, okay, so I can't get to try and find another doctor this week because I have to pay my heat, and I'm diabetic, so when you add that into, you know, just regular day-to-day life things, it becomes impossible to do any of the quote-unquote extras, which mental health shouldn't be considered an extra. That is your health and well-being.
Yeah, but it's an extra fee.
It is. Insurance. Yeah.
To even have that be an available thing. I remember when I first got, like, my big girl job. That's mm-hmm. what I called it. My first big girl job with, like, real insurance and right. real health care and stuff like that. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go get a therapist.
Yeah.
And then I traveled down that line of, okay, healthcare providers and who accepts what and how much is this going to cost and how much is a 30-minute session or right. an hour session or I can't meet with you because of this and that. And it was just like, okay, this is too much. Yeah. I just want to talk to someone.
Right. It becomes, yeah, it becomes overwhelming and too much. And then if you do, because for our listeners, a lot of them know that we went to dozens upon dozens of doctors trying to find help. And it is, you put yourself into debt just to try and live a higher quality of life. And for a lot of people, that's just not an option. I mean, I'm 31 and I'm still paying on some of these bills from when I'm like 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that's not an option. And I am fully aware that I am lucky in that we were able to do some of the things that we were able to do because some of my parts, they would just go and get a job like bartending, take all that money. And then we lived in our car for a while because of that, because we couldn't afford rent and we were going to die. So some of these things, but I don't have children. I had nobody that I was accountable to. These are major differences. I didn't have like this massive family that I was close to. I didn't, we got older, and plus there's give and take with this, but I have DID to where it wasn't even my decision. One of my parts just left, went and did it. And I know for a lot of people in the Black and Brown community, the mental health is already a massively stigmatized topic, but then you try and explain to somebody, listen, I don't remember what just happened the last 2 weeks. What are you talking about? And then, you know, well, what are you talking about, dude? Whatever the inference is. And then you just laugh and brush it off because that's exactly what I did too.
That's how one of my friends is. He has never, like, been diagnosed with DID. He hasn't even went to a doctor to even begin that process. But he talks about, he has very, very erratic behavior, meaning he'll be one person with me, but if someone comes around, like, he's very, like, I feel your vibe, I feel your aura kind of person.
Yeah.
And if someone comes around, he'll tell, and he'll just be like, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, okay. And he won't talk to me for, like, 3 weeks. And then he'll pop back up, and he'll be like, hey, what's up? And I'll be like, why did you didn't call me back? You weren't answering my text messages. Like, what happened with you? Like, what? And he'll be like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I was in my own little world. Like, and he'll laugh about it. And he'll laugh it off. And I'll just be like, okay, well, whatever. You just checked out on life for me, whatever. And he'll be like, yeah, but I'm back now.
Yeah.
And that has happened like 3 or 4 times since I've known him. And I've been knowing him since I was like 16.
Mm-hmm. That was exactly my life. Mm-hmm. I had people who, same thing. They're like, well, where the hell have you been? What are you talking about? I just saw you yesterday. Or, you know, and then by the time I was a teenager, though, and in my early 20s, I was just like, well, you know, I don't know. Well, and change the subject. It's problematic. But then when you compound that with not being able to find help, that just gets really tricky for people because you're talking about compounded traumas, one thing after another. And then when you add some of the cultural problems with that, and then when you add the various neighborhoods that someone could have grown up in, it just builds the list. And we get people who ask us, hey, do you know a doctor that fits this, 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 and this criteria? That's so specific. I will do everything I can to help you find someone like that. But you might have to go to, like, Missouri or Cleveland, Ohio, or anywhere I can find them. And they're like, yeah, no, we could get there. We could get, you know, and it's such a problem. And I don't even mean we all the time. It's not even someone with DID necessarily, just with the severe trauma history. And they're like, yeah, I will drive anywhere within the Midwest to get help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, I don't know, like, experiencing these behaviors and experiencing trauma in such a way affects you to where, from that point on, your every decision that you make in life is affected or is a result of what happened. Absolutely. So for me, a lot of decisions that I make when it comes to, like, guys or like relationships or things like that, even with jobs, I will instigate things just to see what behavior I will get back as a result. Mm-hmm. And that will let me know how to kind of flow in that situation. Because if not, I would be kind of like lost out here in the wolves without having that type of behavior. Yeah. And sometimes I'm thankful that that happened to me because it made me develop like a sixth sense or something. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'm like, why did this even happen to me? Because I get paranoid about situations that aren't even real. So
absolutely. Yeah. That's the, pardon me, but that's the bitch of hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. It is. It saves you a lot of heartache, but then it just, some days it just compounds into this mess in your brain and it gets real tricky. It really does.
Yeah, it does.
And it's even more difficult if you can't find help. It's not right.
No.
it's just wrong and it needs to change. And can you tell us a little bit more about what you mentioned something earlier that you're planning for music and mental health coming up. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
In January, I'm going to be having a showcase for music, and a percentage of the funds that are generated from that will go toward Sister Afia. She doesn't know that yet, but they'll be coming to her, kind of like facilitate, because she does this Black Mental Wellness Weekend that was really, really successful. Very so cool. I'm going to like donate to her so that she can keep that going. And then from there, there's going to be a bigger event called like a Dinner with Fresh Culture in March.
Yeah,
in March, and that event that's the event that will be honoring a couple of people who do amazing things in the community as it relates to mental health. And then I'm really, really, really trying to get this one big name to come. So, if it's in our schedule, I mean, she films here, so if it's in our schedule, she'll probably be able to come, but who knows?
Well, let's hope that she does. Because that would be really cool. Yeah, you're like one of the most organized people I've talked to in recent months. I'm like, can I borrow your organization real quick? Meanwhile, I'm over here like, I don't even know what's happening.
I try to be sometimes. And sometimes, like, honestly, thank you for telling me that. Because I think that I'm all over the place sometimes. So.
No, of course. Yeah, you are on top of stuff. All right, everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of the We and Me podcast. A big thank you to Miss Brianna Moss for coming on the podcast and discussing some of the fantastic things she has going on in Chicago with Fresh Culture. So I'm going to go ahead and let her tell you where you can find her and more information about everything that she's doing in Chicago.
Okay, hi, everybody. Well, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FreshCulture825. That's the handle on all of them. And then on YouTube, you can just find me at Fresh Culture. That's where you can find me. Oh, and also check out my website. It's FreshCultureLLC.com.
All right. Thanks very much to Brianna for coming on again. And we will see you guys on the next episode. Don't forget to check the description box below. It'll have all of Fresh Culture's links and Brianna's links. You can find everything about her down there. Have a great week, everybody.
I have my own rogue gallery, a little Batman in disguise. I have a tragic story and some people I despise. I have my villains, names and shadow and the sides that will ensue. I have a history so hollow and a story to tell you. Eventually our hero boy forgets and breaks away. His mind wasn't meant for this, he's lying, he ain't okay. Eventually our hero boy will forget he has a soul. and eventually our hero boy, his heart will take the toll. Eventually our hero boy will take what he has known. He'll use his newfound strength to let you know you're not alone. Smile again, getting there was quite a bend, but he's okay now.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the We and Me podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on if you enjoy the show. Big thanks to Adam from Compulsive Inc. This is his original song, Rogue. Adam is a member of the DID community that reached out to us via Stevie's call for musicians on Twitter. So go check out Compulsive Inc. on YouTube via the link in the description box below. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.